This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by ProPax with NT-Factor, a complete vitamin and mineral formula. NT-Factor is the only nutritional formula clinically proven to reduce fatigue, whatever the cause, whether it be age, illness, or just being run down. NT-Factor repairs damaged cells, restores healthy bacteria in your digestive tract. Clinical trials have shown NT-Factor reduces fatigue by almost half, and it even reverses some symptoms of aging. I've been taking NT-Factor for years, and now the 45-day money-back guarantee, you have nothing to lose. To order, call 800-982-9158, that's 800-982-9158, or go to ntfactor.com, that's ntfactor.com. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hobman, and today we're going to talk about grassroots action because, when moms mobilize for whatever cause, they can constitute a very, very powerful force because, they're really at the core of family values. They have their eye on kids' health, and they have a vision for a healthier world. Today we're going to talk to the founder of Moms Across America. Moms Across America is an organization, a powerhouse national coalition of moms, reaching as many as 4 million plus on social media each month, who are dedicated to ensuring that the food we eat and feed our families is safe, with an emphasis on eliminating GMOs and glyphosate. That, of course, the key ingredient in Roundup, there's mounting evidence of its toxicity, and more government entities are pushing back against the use of glyphosate. And, of course, we need mobilization here in the States about this potential hazard and others. So without further ado, here's Zen Honeycutt. Zen, it's a pleasure having you on Intelligent Medicine. Thanks for joining us.
Oh, thank you so much, Ronald, and thanks to all of your listeners for being with us today. I appreciate it so much.
Okay, well, tell us a little bit about how you got engaged by this cause. You started out as a mom, you know, with ordinary concerns about your family, but then you made it into a movement.
Yes, well, and that was not my intention, I have to say. Before I got involved in the food movement, I thought activists were fussy and had too much time on their hands and would probably smell too much like patchouli. So I just avoided them. And I was really not interested in being an activist. I was a stay-at-home mom. I was an entrepreneur of a natural wellness company. Before that, I was a fashion designer. So I had absolutely no experience with, nonprofits, save for maybe an email from the Sierra Club now and then. But I really didn't. I really didn't think that it was in my, you know, realm of whatever happened in my life to be involved and be an activist. But then my children started to get very sick, and it started out with a food allergy with my son when he was a baby to milk, which was, you know, very sad for me because I had to not consume any dairy or cheese or, you know, pizza for a year when I was breastfeeding him.
So that's of interest because it wasn't as if feeding him directly cow's milk formula. You, in nursing him, had to avoid dairy because you were imparting dairy proteins to him through your breast milk.
Sure. Yes. And his poo was very green and unusual looking. And he was crying an awful lot. It was just terrible to get him to sleep. His stomach was clearly in pain. And so we finally figured that out after a few months.
I'm just curious, how long did it, how much detective work did it take for you to determine that it was the dairy you were consuming that was causing him his problems? And how much support did you get from the pediatric community in terms of identifying that?
It took quite some time, I would have to say. I don't think we found out until he was about maybe close to 18 months, close to the end of the time when I was breastfeeding him, mm-hmm. because I breastfed him for almost 2 years. So it was, you know, it was quite some time. So maybe a little bit earlier than that. Maybe
there should be greater awareness of that potential. But, you know, obviously that information was scarce. It was hard to come by.
Yeah, they did not, my pediatrician did not think that the food that I was eating could impact my baby in any way. She just really didn't advise that at first. And when I started looking around on, you know, I talked to mom, I was a part of the mom's club and different mom's groups. Mm-hmm. We started talking about our children having allergies and maybe it was dairy or wheat, you know, different people had different theories. And so I started to look into that and eventually took my son to an allergist and he tested him and saw that he did in fact have a milk allergy. But keep in mind, this was to conventional milk. I wasn't drinking organic milk and or organic cheese back then. You know, I ate pretty healthy. We didn't. Mm-hmm. I didn't have candy bars hanging around the house, and we didn't drink soda. You know, we ate what I thought was pretty healthy, but we were not eating organic, and I was completely unaware of GMOs or any type of chemicals in the food supply. Mm-hmm. So I had to eliminate milk from my diet. And then later around when he was around 18 months, my mother fed him a walnut, but he was also petting the dog. So we didn't know if his rash came from the nuts or the dog, but we eventually took him to the allergist again and he tested him. He did skin pinpricks, which are horrifying for a parent and the child. He had all of these, you know, pinpricks all over his back and his arms and did see that he was allergic to nuts. Mm-hmm. So We then got the EpiPen and started carrying that around with us. And when he was about 5 years old, it was Thanksgiving evening and we were eating, you know, a wonderful meal at my in-law's house. And suddenly he looked at me and he looked very sick. Mm. And I thought, oh no, he's got like the flu or something. So I sent him to the back room to go lay down. And then a couple minutes after that, he cried out. And so my husband and I ran to him. And we saw him standing up crying and his whole body was swelling up. And he was like, he looked like a raspberry, like bumps, like a raspberry on his body.
So he had an anaphylactic reaction, obviously.
Yeah. So we immediately gave him, my husband jammed the EpiPen into his leg and he couldn't get it out. And so I had to pull it out and it spurt blood across the room and everybody was screaming. Whoa. It was terrifying. And we didn't even think about calling the ambulance. We just ran to the car and got in the car and went to the hospital. Mm-hmm. In the car, in the back seat, his eyes were rolling back in his head and I thought he was going to die. Mm. So I was pushing on his chest and like, you know, begging him to breathe. And I don't know if that kept him alive or not, but he lived through that. You know, of course they pumped his body filled with steroids, which I later found out can impact eyesight, which his eyesight has been impacted. Mm. But anyway, you know, better than not to die, right? Mm-hmm. But his eyesight was impacted. And so since then we decided to just really avoid nuts, right? We were resigned and doubtful that anything could change. We just had to stay away from nuts and be aware of the food supply. And then one day I realized that just wasn't normal. Like that, why could my son eat a hot dog one day, but not the next? Why could he eat ice cream one day, but not the, you know, what was going on? It might not just be him. It might be what's going on with the food. Mm-hmm. And so I began to research the food supply. I found Robin O'Brien's TED Talk, Patriotism on a Plate, and watched Jeffrey Smith's movie, Genetic Roulette. And I put one and two together and realized, wait a second, these GMOs are foreign proteins that are in the food supply that our government has not been telling us about.
So the common denominator is not per se that, you know, nuts are bad food for kids or, you know, dairy is a, you know, a potential, you know, pathogen for children. It's something has altered the way that kids' immune systems respond to common foods that should be well tolerated. I mean, you know, I'm probably a few years senior to you. And, you know, I got to say, when I was a kid, there were no such things as, you know, cupcake-free zones, nut-free zones.
Yes.
You know, we all, you know, our moms baked, you know, stuff for bake sales, and you know, there weren't big concerns about, you know, what, you know, reading elaborate ingredient lists. It was the rare kid who had some sort of allergy. Things have changed in the, you know, 60 years since I was a child.
Yes, absolutely. And when I was a child too, I mean, I'm 46 now, so when I was a child, GMOs did not exist. They were not in the food supply. Roundup has only been used for the past 40 years in the food supply, and most immediately in the past 10 or 20. In the past 10 years, over 70% of Roundup, which is a glyphosate-based herbicide, has over 70% of what has ever been used has been used in the past 10 years. Mm-hmm. So an enormous amount of glyphosate-based herbicides, of which 80% of GMOs are engineered to withstand these particular herbicides, right? So these herbicides are sprayed directly on genetically modified foods and during their growth, and it kills the weeds around them, but not the crop. So this started happening about 20 years ago. And then about 10 years ago, they got this idea to spray the crops, and this meat includes non-GMO crops, if they're not organic, like wheat, peas, beans, legumes, oats, to spray them with glyphosate-based herbicides as a drying agent before harvest so mm-hmm. that they can be dried more uniformly and harvested more quickly and efficiently. And so that's been happening.
So they really saturate these crops with glyphosate.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and it's important to note that they don't wash off and they don't dry off. And so this is what was happening to the food supply, unbeknownst to mothers like me, struggling with children with allergies, autism symptoms, autoimmune issues, asthma, not knowing what the heck is going on, blaming ourselves. Most of us mothers too had weight issues. I used to be a size 12. Now I'm a size 2 or a 4. Fatigue, mental disorders like, you know, early onset dementia. I mean, I didn't have this, but many people have that now. Memory loss, all kinds of irritability and anxiety and depression, right? So these are all connected to the destruction of our gut bacteria, which is impacted by glyphosate, it being in practically every bite of our food if you're eating conventional food in America today.
Let's expand a little on that concept. Mm-hmm. Is, you know, the microbiome is thought to be very important in terms of regulating our immune systems. And, you know, because we take too many antibiotics or take too much chlorinated or fluoridated water, we seem to be disrupting our microbiome, perhaps also with acid-blocking medications. But what about glyphosate? Glyphosate is an herbicide. Mm-hmm. It's designed to kill weeds. So is it conceivable that the glyphosate residues on food may be changing the character of the microbiome? It's an herbicide, after all. Are there potential effects on the, you know, trillions of bacteria that populate our intestinal tracts?
Well, yes, it's been scientifically proven to do that. That's what the science has shown, is that glyphosate destroys the beneficial gut bacteria. It actually targets the beneficial gut bacteria and allows for the proliferation of the pathogenic gut bacteria, such as E. coli and Salmonella. And E. coli is responsible for 90% of the UTIs, urinary tract infections, that are happening.
Which are so prevalent now, yeah.
Which are so prevalent now. And I have to say, personally, I'm affected by this immediately right now because I had some chicken, and chicken is in the headlines right now because Costco is selling $4.99 chickens, right? And right. CNN has picked up that story. So take a look on CNN story.
It's the loss leader that brings people in the store to buy other more expensive items, you know, but it's like you got to score that $4 chicken because it's such a deal.
Yeah, it's such a deal. So the problem is that chicken, according to Mercola, is responsible for the majority of the UTIs. And this is because it harbors a particular E. coli bacteria. Now, I would assert that this is connected to the high levels of glyphosate that chickens eat on their chicken feed. We have a Moms Across America supporter who told me that her husband, who's a trucker, had to get a special hazmat license just to transport chicken feed because it has such high levels of toxins. And that would include Roundup, you know, glyphosate spraying on the grains, and arsenic. So, to extend this story, so I ate some chicken while I was traveling. I travel quite a bit, right, to speak about GMOs and toxins, which, of course, are Bayer's, Bayer now owns Monsanto, right, the primary manufacturer of glyphosate. So Bayer is responsible for the majority of the glyphosate in the world being used. And
also responsible for a lot of liability because of all the lawsuits and multi-million dollar judgments against Bayer. You know, it's kind of, they thought, oh, you know, we'll just acquire this, you know, Monsanto. Gave them Bayer, unfortunately, a little bit of a headache. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So I eat some chicken when I'm traveling, right? Conventional chicken against my better judgment. I was very hungry and I was at an airport and that was like what seemed like the safest thing to eat was a chicken Caesar salad. And I get a UTI, surprise, surprise. And it was reoccurring. I mean, just for weeks, it would not go away. And no matter what the different type of natural remedies I used, which I used everything I could find. So one day I just went to a walk-in clinic and they prescribed a antibiotic and the antibiotic happens to be Cipro, which is fluoroquinone from Bayer.
There we go. Yeah.
Right. From Bayer, which leads to what I currently have right now, which is a torn tendon in my shoulder.
Oh, I have to say that I was at a party recently. It was actually my granddaughter's birthday party. And, you know, there are a bunch of, you know, younger kids there. And there was this gal who was walking around with a limp and she had a bandage on her calf. And I said, what's going on? She says, well, I tore my Achilles tendon. And I said, oh, did you by any chance take an antibiotic called Cipro? Did you have a urinary tract infection? And she looked at me like I was a seer. You know, I was
psychic.
You know, like, she said, oh my goodness. And so, and then she told my daughter, oh, I'm so impressed with your dad. He's so brilliant, you know, that I deduced that she'd, but precisely this, you know, that story just keeps coming up again and again and again with the antibiotic Cipro. So
it's connected to the food supply, which I want people to know. There's an impact of this confined animal feeding operations, which are, you know, these chickens that are thousands of them in cages. They are administered antibiotics because there are so many of them in such a confined space that they get diseases, and those antibiotics increase the virulence, you know, the strength of
they're giving antibiotics in their drinking water virtually, you know, just as a prophylactic to prevent
infections.
The conditions that they're crammed into are highly supportive of, you know, infections and early mortality for those chickens. So, you know, you want to avoid the losses, keep those profits coming. So you put antibiotics into the water.
Yeah. So best to avoid that. Eat organic as much as possible and bring your food with you. Don't do what I did.
Yeah.
And bring as much food as you can with you when you travel.
A critical lapse. So you're taking this message out on the road with moms across America, but also across the world. I mean, you're traveling to you know, all parts of the globe to establish grassroots movements in various countries. Tell us about your work there.
Yeah, sure. Well, my book was just published. It's called Unstoppable, Transforming Sickness and Struggle into Triumph, Empowerment, and a Celebration of Community. And it's on Amazon here in the United States in English, and it's now in Japan, published there. And it came out a couple of weeks ago, and I will be going to Japan in the first couple of weeks of December and doing a 9-city tour. So I'm very excited to get the word out there because Japan happens to own the largest grain distribution center in the world. And it's based in New Orleans or outside of New Orleans in Louisiana. And they ship out, I believe it's about 300 million tons of grains and the predominantly GMO grains. And they're shipped to China, Japan, Taiwan, Korea, you know, and most of Southeast Asia. So if we could convince the Japanese government to, you know, stop buying GMOs, grains, and buy regenerative organic or, you know, regeneratively grown organic grains instead, that could transform the food industry alone right there. I mean, that would be such a huge switch for the growers and for the state of our soil here in the United States and our water and the families that live around those farms. That would make a huge difference. There was a study that came out just this past year in Indiana of 71 pregnant women that were studied, and the ones that were exposed to glyphosate-based herbicides due to the heavy spraying on the GMO crops near their homes were the ones that had statistically higher or significantly higher numbers of preterm gestations, you know, shortened gestations, which can mean miscarriages, not just, you know, a baby born early.
But obviously heighten the risk for health problems in preemies. I mean, they're notorious for having more allergic problems, more respiratory problems, more cognitive problems.
Developmental delays.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. So we know that the growing of GMO grains here in the United States is not just, you know, not good for, you know, Japan and China and the animals that are eating those grains over there and for the consumers there to be eating them, but it's not good for the residents and the people of America here, you know, that those chemicals go into our water supply, they go into our rain, the soil, and also contribute to climate change, because when the soil is depleted of vital minerals, it cannot absorb water as much as it's supposed to, and it cannot absorb carbon, which is, mm-hmm. you know, incredibly important to mm-hmm. to draw down in the air.
The natural cycling, which keeps the planet in balance, is disrupted.
Yes, yeah. Absolutely, by GMO monocrop cultures, which is what the manufacturers say, that GMO crops are more sustainable because they don't have to till. Now, tilling is not great, but there are ways to farm without tilling and without toxic chemicals, and that's called regenerative organic agriculture. And the Japanese have actually, they were doing this thousands of years ago, you know, just you use mm-hmm. cover crops and things like that. But in the U.S. now, it's a new movement. We're very excited about it, and our new standard, our Moms Across America Gold Standard, actually supports regenerative agriculture. So we can talk more about that too, I'm sure.
Great. Okay, well, let's pause because at this point, we divide our podcast into two parts. In part two, we're going to talk more about Moms Across America, what the initiative is all about, and how you, intelligent medicine listener, can get involved in this important work. We're talking to Zen Honeycutt, who is a co-founder of Moms Across America. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.